This is Jeremy Weir Alderson, a.k.a. Nobody, welcoming you to a special rebroadcast of Live from the March for Our Lives. The March for Our Lives was a poor people's march on the Republican National Convention that took place in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul on September 2nd. What you are about to hear is the dramatic audio of the original live broadcast as the march assembled and then took to the streets.
Now I'm going to take a little tour around and see there. I'm seeing now a lot of people who have signs. And here we have actually, I am now walking around a little bit here in the crowd. And here are the lobbyists for McCain. Let me see if I can get a little of their audio.
Then you'll share our right-wing views. Watch more Fox News. Then you'll share our right-wing views.
Okay, I hope everybody caught that. They're chanting... Let's do more Fox News, listen to Fox News, and share our right-wing views. All right, let me tell people a little more about the scene here. We're still in a gathering phase here. We're still, the crowd is still gathering, and people are still coming, I'm glad to say. And the march itself hasn't started yet. Well, it's like every march. They gather before they march. And I'm looking now at a gentleman wearing an American flag top hat. A lot of people wearing the white T-shirts that say the March for Our Lives. I'm looking at a woman who's wearing a big code pink for peace button. I'm looking at a woman who's wearing a T-shirt that says no way, no how, no McCain, but it doesn't say McCain. It says McSame. No way, no how, no McSame. My guest speaking here at the March for Our Lives is Farheen Hakim. Hey, I got that right, huh?
Yes.
Well, that's not easy. Who is a community activist, a leader, an educator, an experienced grassroots organizer, and you are a Green Party endorsed state representative or candidate for state representative?
Yes.
Candidate for state representative for District 61D, and that's in Minneapolis?
Yes, that's right. It's in South Minneapolis where many of the raids that are happening to individuals are occurring right there in that district. The bus of young protesters that were arrested and pulled over and on the side happened on Lake Street and 11th, which is right in the district.
Very good. And so you're saying the raids are anti-immigrant raids you're talking about?
No, it's anti-everything raid. It's really sad that many young people and old people and who are just trying to voice their dissent, that's all they're really doing, are being accused of violence, are being accused of wrongful doing and unlawful activity. Their houses are getting raided. Their houses are getting boarded up, too. There's unlawful searches that are going on. They're based on things like such as some as frivolous as fire codes to a felony to inspire a riot or conspiracy to riot. And so, in general, the very people that are supposed to be represented at the state capitol, they're being targeted. They're really trying to break into the progressive politics of South Minneapolis. And I'm here to say no, it's not happening.
Now, if I understand what you're saying, then there is no discrimination in Minneapolis, because if you dissent, they'll arrest anyone.
They'll arrest anyone. And I've seen so many people, whether it's old grannies to people of color that have absolutely nothing to do with this. I've been seeing many people that are focused on the repression and are subjugated to this. And it's just not right. It's not fair. But I think what it's doing is motivating people to come out even more and stand up and saying this is not going to happen.
Well, I want to say I find that inspiring and heartwarming that there's no discrimination based on race, creed, age. You can get arrested just for speaking out. No matter who you are here in America, which is kind of a heartwarming story. We don't get many of these heartwarming good stories like that. Now, if I may say, Farheen, I hope I'm not saying anything that that you don't object to, but just because it's I'm looking at you and I can see you're wearing, I guess that's I know I'm going to mispronounce a hijab, is that?
Hijab. I'm wearing hijab, yeah.
Okay, well, I had one out of two, folks. That wasn't bad, okay? So you're wearing a hijab, which means that you're then a Muslim woman.
Yes, I am Muslim, yeah.
Okay, and do you find any special discrimination or any special issues? You're here as a Muslim woman participating in this march. Do you find any special issues affecting the Muslim community here?
Hey, very much so. The majority of the population here in the Twin Cities happen to be recently arrivals and immigrants from East Africa that are Muslim. And the discrimination that they're dealing with right now is just really compounded. The fact that one of the producers of Democracy Now! Happens to have an Islamic name very clearly to me seems that he was racially profiled by the St. Paul police. And I'm definitely much more nervous and much more cautious throughout throughout this area. In St. Paul, I'm not as well known as I am in Minneapolis. In Minneapolis, people are like, oh, that's the woman that's running. She's a Green Party woman. We're not going to mess with her as much. But here, I'm just another Muslim to them. And even one of my colleagues was called a white terrorist. And I thought to myself, so what? Terrorists usually in general are a certain color, you know, and that if you're not a person of color or a Muslim and you're a terrorist, then you get upgraded to a special breed. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And none of us have any weapons. None of us have any intention. I don't have any urine or fecal matter on me to be throwing to anyone. It's just absolutely ridiculous that the basic things, whether it's a kitchen knife or your toilet, are all now seen as weapons. That's just absolutely absurd. And I want people from all faiths, all colors, to be here today saying, we're not tolerating any of this. We're here to stand up, to build power, to make a change.
Now, as I understand it, a couple of things you've alluded to, which, first of all, there was a bust at the anarchists' meeting place, and they announced that they had found 5-gallon buckets of urine there. Now, what the anarchists claimed was that was gray water they were using to flush the toilets as part of a conservation thing, and that was false reporting by the police about it. But you alluded to, Amy Goodman was arrested yesterday. Are you saying you think there's a connection between that arrest and the fact that one of her producers is a Muslim?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, they had their media credentials on them. There's no reason for them to have been arrested at all. There's just no reason at all. And, you know, I mean, the St. Paul police and the Minneapolis police have a long history of being, of conducting racial profiling and judging people and arresting people.
All right. And on that note, I thank you very much. And we're going to throw it back now to Jessica Lockhart, our intrepid reporter here, who also has a guest.
The riot police came in and they asked a couple of Minnesotans to take apart their signs because their signs had some, looked like wooden posts. So I've got Bob and Pat Tammon, they're from the Iron Range. Bob, can you tell me why you're here today?
Well, we came down for the convention. I guess what motivated us is that I'm a Vietnam vet and I saw what happened in Vietnam, and so you kind of connect that to the Iraq thing. And then now we're here with the poor people's get together, and it's pretty obvious we're having the same problem now that we had 40 years ago. We're spending so much money on military activities that we're starving out our population. And if you've got a system that's designed to move money from poor people to rich people, the supply of poor people is going to get pretty big after a few years of it. And so that's one of the reasons we're down here.
And Bob, I'm going to ask you to tell everybody, if you don't mind, your age. And can you tell me a little bit about the town you live in?
I'm 66 years old. My wife and I are retired. My wife, Pat, taught Neely for 30 years. We live up north. We love our little community. But it's an old mining town, and it's struggling a little bit economically, but we're doing pretty good. And the problems we're seeing is that mining is doing very good right now. The economy is just booming for mining, but our schools are still starving. And it seems to be a lot of Minnesota is that way. Even in the middle of prosperity, our schools are starving. And I think our whole approach to economics, we have our priorities all wrong. We're financing these wars against people that never attacked us, and we're starving out our schools. So I think we have to reorder our economic system.
And Bob, can you just tell me a little bit about, tell me what you think about the Republican convention and their agenda. Do you think it's going to be anything geared towards helping some of these issues you're talking about?
Well, you know, it looks like more of the same. They try to make the point that McCain is going to be another 4 more years of Bush, and he hasn't changed my mind with anything he said. It's obvious economically we need to change our direction if we're going to cure some of the poverty we got in our country. And so far as what the Republican convention is doing, it's more going to be more tax breaks for the rich and struggling for the poor. They're going to try and gut society. And you know, my wife and I love to come down here and visit, but still you look at the city, there's a lot of parts of this city that are hurting. We building our money up to the top of the economic system and get some down into our city neighborhoods and get these neighborhoods healthy again.
I want to thank you so much for talking with me. That's Bob and Pat Sudan. I just let everybody know. Thank you. Now, the march is next, and I'm going to see if I can send this back to Jeremy, and we're going to continue on with this live broadcast. Jeremy, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Jessica. And through the magic of radio, we're going to have a very interesting dialogue right now. I have with me Shimako Noble, who is the San Jose president of the hip hop.
National president.
Oh, you're from San Jose.
Correct.
From San Jose, who is the president of the Hip Hop Congress, an organization that uses hip hop to encourage social change. And he's a member of the Poor People Economic Human Rights Campaign. On the phone, we have, if I got the name right, Con Carroll, a conservative from the Heritage Foundation. Con, are you there? Do we have Con Carroll? Well, I don't hear Con Carroll, so I'll just talk to you, Shimako, and if it's anybody in the studio can pump Con in, I don't know what happened to the studio connection. But in the meantime, is that the studio? Can you hear me there?
Like from yesterday,
Well, that's Con I'm speaking to, right? Okay, well, Con, great. Well, I'm very glad to hear it. Let me first ask
Shimako.
I'm sorry, Shimako.
Right, all right.
Let me ask you what you could possibly have to be protesting about here in the great United States, and then I'll ask Con for his perspective on it. So, Shimako, what could possibly be wrong from your point of view?
Well, the first thing I want to say, just to make this absolutely clear, is that I love this country. I love the people of this country. I've been all over. I love America. And so I don't want this to become a, you know, we hate America, I hate America thing. But the reality is that there are some things in this country that we cannot be proud of right now. There are people every day who are dying for lack of access to health care. Gentrification is taking place at phenomenal rates for a variety of different reasons. People are losing jobs left and right. Poverty levels are skyrocketing. More and more we're starting to see this affect communities, families. Obviously, there's no debating the fact that foreclosure rates are off the scale. There's no debating that gasoline prices are off the scale. There's a little bit of debate about the condition of our environment. The majority of the rational planet has determined that there's action to be taken. And America, as a leader of the free world, or at least as it presents itself, as a country of hope and freedom, as a country that cares about and loves its people, has an obligation at this time to take the appropriate steps to begin to alter that situation.
Con, let me thank you very much, by the way. I know this is difficult for you to participate in this. You've heard quite a lot from Shimako. What do you have to say to that? What does the Heritage Foundation, these are people who are protesting against the Republicans because it's the party in power and they feel their needs aren't being met. What does the Heritage Foundation have to say to people like Shimako?
We'll stick to the issues that he named. I think when you look at all of them, what you see is that, you know, what the country needs to change in Iraq is not changing in America. You know, you talk about gentrification, which, you know, at least the Heritage Foundation is going to be good for. Gentrification means people are getting richer, and we're for that. They're richer, they're healthier, they're more educated, they have more options. We think gentrification is great. And there are other issues he talked about, the foreclosure crisis. That's an issue that was brought up by too much government. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have been purchasing Alt-A loans and reinsuring them since the early 90s, and they fueled this housing boom. All that risk was there because of government intervention in the marketplace, and now they're collapsing, more paying the price for government intervention. And on energy, it's the same thing. We have all these billions and billions of barrels of oil that could be developed off our coast, trillions of cubic feet of natural gas off our coast that could be developed and could be lowering prices, but liberals in government are preventing these resources from being developed. Government needs to get out of the way and let private market lower the energy prices by themselves.
Okay, well, Con, let's stick with one of your points there. We're getting a lot of ground. When you say gentrification means that people are getting richer, it definitely means that some people are getting richer, but it doesn't mean that everybody's getting richer.
I apologize for interrupting, Colin, but I think you were really excellent with statistics there. I felt like the one vague thing that you stated was actually that people are getting richer. Do you have any numbers on that? Like what percentage of people are getting richer? What populations are getting richer? What areas of the country are getting richer? Because I'm on the ground a lot, and when I travel the country, what it seems to me is that people are getting a lot poorer, with the exception of small groups of people in individual cities that build condos that nobody can even afford.
Well, two issues.
Colin?
Generally, when you have an area in a city that was poor and becomes gentrified, what happens is that people are coming in and buying up those properties, which means the people that own those properties before are getting more money for them, and the overall land value is going up, and people are getting more wealthy. And furthermore, if you look at the latest census data, which came out last week, it shows that poverty stayed flat for the last couple of years, and that incomes are actually on the rise. The New York Times article.
Shimaka?
It's really interesting that he's saying that poverty stays flat, as if inflation does not exist, as if gas prices have not gone up, as if rent prices have not gone up, as if cost of living has not gone up, and as if living wages have not actually adjusted to all of these things. The reality of the situation is that it's really tricky to play the statistics game, because statistics can be swayed. But what I'm really interested to know, what I'm really interested to see, is how much research the Heritage Foundation has done in poor communities to determine how these people feel about their conditions, and connected that to the circumstances that he's discussing.
Well, Shimaka, let me ask you, before we toss this back to Khan.
Sure.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying that the macro picture, if you will, that Khan is describing is disconnected from the reality that you're seeing in the poor communities.
Not only is it disconnected, but from where I'm standing, it seems almost intentionally disconnected. And I want to emphasize a point here. I actually have a friend at the Heritage Foundation. I don't know if he's still there. It's a gentleman by the name of Mike. We've had some good times in Boulder, Colorado. And so I just want to state that on a person-to-person basis, I don't have any problem with Republicans. I don't have any problem with conservatives. But if you really look at what's happening in this country, Republicans and conservatives in a variety of different states who are looking at their party right now and saying, do these people actually care about me? And I think that the real simple answer to that is no.
Okay, Khan, you hear what Shimako is saying. And look, what he's saying is that even if that it's disconnected, that you don't care, that your answers are not for his community, what do you say?
Yeah, it's completely, bypassed 90% of what I said, and that the gas prices are way too high. The foreclosure rates are way too high. But the problem is that not that people don't care, or that the government hasn't been doing enough. It's that government hasn't been doing too much. You didn't respond to any of the arguments I made about Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae's role in the foreclosure crisis. Did you respond to any of the arguments I made about how the environmentalists are the ones who are responsible for a high energy crisis? These are just facts. And yes,
before we get to Khan, something I did not hear you address. If a neighborhood gentrifies, it goes without saying that the poor people cannot continue to remain there. In the Heritage Foundation's view, where are the poor people supposed to go when they can no longer afford to live in a gentrified neighborhood?
Well, there always can be neighborhoods that are elsewhere and that are cheaper. That's the way the market works.
Yeah, I keep hearing him mention the market, and I'm glad you mentioned that. I apologize for not responding to your commentary, because you did give one good example. And it wasn't that I was ignoring your argument; it was just that you only gave one good example in a bevy of counterexamples. For instance, I think it's very clear that the healthcare industry, for instance, is pricing medication. Excuse me, I was talking. I believe that the healthcare industry has priced thousands, if not millions of people out of the ability to purchase very simple medications. I mean, let's deal with the fact that there are people, because they cannot get on insurance and hospitals cannot take them in. You have people coming in on emergency circumstances and they are immediately removed by some sort of carrier to cover their health insurance.
Okay, well, let's stop there, Khan. What does the Heritage Foundation have to say about the issue of people who are dying because they can't afford medication?
I think that's a great question, because again, we have an issue where people, like Paul Cousin, liberals always say that we have a free market in healthcare, and nothing could be further from the truth. I don't know how many jobs you have, but every time I have to choose my job, I also have to choose my insurance. And not true with my auto insurance, not true with anything else I buy. We have a heavily regulated healthcare market that forces us to buy insurance through our employers. And furthermore, each of these insurance plans are heavily regulated by each state industry. So that, for example, someone who wants to buy the most simple basic plan possible in New Jersey has to spend 50 $15,000 a year on health insurance. Whereas somebody in Kentucky, a 20-year-old male can buy that same plan for about $700 a year. And that is all due to excess government regulation in New Jersey. If we got rid of the excess regulation and allowed people to buy the insurance that they needed, millions more people could afford insurance every year. The problem, again, is too much government regulation.
Okay, Shimoko?
You know, Connor, I just want to say I really appreciate this discussion and your attendance here. And actually, maybe you're right. Maybe there's too much government regulation. Only the last 8 years have primarily been the Bush administration. So if there has been too much government regulation, you have to ask ourselves, like, what government exactly is regulating it? And I would also say that really what we're talking about with the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign kind of bypasses all that. Because what we're discussing here is universal health care, single-payer health care. Quite simply, doing what is necessary, for instance, taking the $50 million that was spent on Homeland Security and the billions of dollars that have been spent on the war, and redirecting that into ensuring that each and every state has a similar health care plan that guarantees that irrespective of what your individual plan's coverage is, you're going to get that medication, you're going to get that care. And I think that there are countries all across the world, I think that there are organizations and individuals in each and every state who actually presented these plans to various government officials. In fact, I'm almost positive that someone at the Heritage Foundation has to have studied it at one point or another. They're completely functional, and if they're not completely functional, they have to be at least better than the system we have now that is literally killing America's citizens.
Khan?
Oh, well, you know, definitely, like I said before, we definitely have a perfect system, but, you know, the Republican president has been dealing with a barely functioning Senate and Democratic-controlled Congress and hasn't been able to get them passed. But what's more interesting is that if you look at Barack Obama's plan, he tries to sell it as a model of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Plan, FEHBP. And he says that he wants the American people to buy the same type of insurance that Congress does. Well, the funny thing about that is that the Heritage Foundation has been arguing a similar model for over a decade now. But there's a huge difference between Obama's plan, our vision, the conservative vision, and what the other person's talking about. And that is basically that they want a single payer system, that members of Congress, and they buy their own insurance through their plan. They don't have Medicare now, but Obama wants to create that single payer option. And what you get with single payer option is rationing and humongous spending. There's a reason why Canadians routinely come to the United States for surgical procedures, and why they have their children go to here too. And that's because they can't get the services that they need from Canada for rationing.
Khan, I can assure you I'm not here to defend Obama's plan. That's another issue. But let me ask you this, because it goes to the heart of what Shimoko is saying. Do you think that health care and housing and enough to eat are rights? This is the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. They believe these things are rights, even if the Congress is screwed up, even if the president is a good one or a bad one, and you can debate it. They believe that no matter what, you should be able to get those things. Does the Heritage Foundation believe that those things are rights?
We have the right to pursue those things, but no, we don't, the government does not have an obligation to provide the positive rights of its people. It doesn't have the obligation to be everyone's mother and make sure everyone has food, health care, housing, etc.
Did you just say be everyone's mother?
Yes.
Well, listen, we have to wrap this up. So I'm going to now turn it over to Shimoko to make a last comment, and then, Khan, I'm going to let you make a last comment, but I want to thank you. Shimoko?
I'm not a liberal. I'm not a Democrat. I am an American citizen. I am a poor person, and I empathize with the plight and the struggle of the millions and millions of Americans who are experiencing the downturn in the economy that was created by years and years of bad policies, of bad decision making, and ultimately a government that does not recognize that housing, health care, education, and things of this nature are basic human rights. And until that time comes, PPERC will be here and Hip Hop Congress will be here making that a point.
Khan, do you have a last word you'd like to say?
Yeah. You know, conservatives have a very clear vision of individual responsibility, liberty and freedom, and being able to enforce contracts so we can have a working market that best is able to create the housing, prosperity, and wealth we need so that people can pursue their rights and pursue what they want to do. And that when you start having the government provide everything for everybody, decide where people are going to live, what they're going to eat, how they live, how they exercise, how they throw away their trash, you're just handing over way too much power, and we're going to lose all our other rights. And that really is the choice we face.
Carol of the Heritage Foundation and Shimako Noble, president of the National Hip Hop Congress. I want to thank you both very much for having this dialogue on the air live from the March for Our Lives. And with that, I'm going to toss it back to Jessica Lockhart, who is also our other reporter here on the scene of the March for Our Lives. Thank you both.
Hi, Jeremy. Okay, so we're still waiting. The march has not quite happened yet. They're still doing some rallying. They've got lots of speakers getting the crowd ready to start marching through St. Paul, and the goal is that these marchers on the March for Our Lives are going to head through St. Paul and wind their way down to the Excel Convention Center. But before we're waiting to go for the march, we're talking to people here in the crowd, and you can hear the helicopter above me. This helicopter has been here the whole time. The riot police are here, and I want to get on the line with us here. I'm very happy to be speaking with Anjali Kamat, who is one of the news producers for Democracy Now! And I know all of the people listening to this broadcast are familiar with Democracy Now!, one of our really very well-respected news programs that most of the community stations are airing. So, Anjali Kamat, welcome. And I would like first, will you just tell the listeners who might not have known what happened here yesterday with Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!
Hi, it's an honor to be on your program here in St. Paul. Well, basically, as most of your listeners might be aware, there's been a lot of protests going on, and yesterday being the first day of the RNC, there's several marches and direct actions being planned across the city. And Democracy Now! Came from Denver to St. Paul, covering both the conventions, and we sent our teams of people out onto the streets to basically cover what was going on, what the protesters were doing and what the police were doing. And we've been doing this for years, just covering what happens. And in the midst of this, we documented a lot of police brutality. There was police were using tear gas and pepper bombs and pepper spray and rubber bullets. They had big basins in their hands. You know, we were watching all of this, trying to stay out of, their way, but also document what was happening. And in the middle of this, two of our producers were arrested. They were corralled along with hundreds of protesters into a parking lot in downtown St. Paul. And when our news producer, our TV producer, Nicole Salazar, asked the police officer, she's carrying her camera, she's like, how do I get out of here? I don't want to be corralled in here. Was thrown to the ground and dragged by her feet with her face to the ground. Keep in mind here that she's wearing her press pass, very large press pass that says Democracy Now! With her photograph on it, and she's yelling, press, 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 let me go, let me go. And she was, dragged by her feet. Somebody sipped on her back and her shoulders, her nose started bleeding, and she was handcuffed. At which point, when we found out about this, Amy Goodman came on the scene, as did the rest of the crew from Democracy Now! Amy Goodman came up, tried to negotiate with the police, and she was yanked, by the police into the other side of the police line and handcuffed as well. And, for those listeners who want to watch what actually happened, there's videos of this available on YouTube of both Amy Goodman being arrested and Nicole Salazar filming her arrest as she was being dragged on the ground. What happened was Amy Goodman, Nicole Salazar, and Sharif Abdul-Qudus were all taken to the Ramsey County Jail. They were there for a few hours. We had a massive response from our listeners and viewers around the country, a lot of phone calls in. And they were lucky enough to be released after a few hours. Amy Goodman they're all still charged.
So we're speaking with Anjali Kamat, a news producer for Democracy Now! And
hi, everybody. It's me, Jeremy Alderson, a.k.a. Nobody, and welcome to Live from the March for our lives here in, actually, I guess we're in St. Paul, Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul. They are still in the staging of the event. They haven't started marching yet. Some people are being fed. The crowd has swelled. I'm not a crowd counter, but it could easily be up to 1,000 to 2,000 or more. As I look around, I see a group of women, or actually maybe some of them are men, in tutus with rubber noses. You have people who are performing some kind of, you can hear the drums in the background, and we can hear some drums in the background, and there's some kind of, I don't know if it's Native American or Polynesian, so I can't really see it that well, some kind of indigenous art performance. With me, though, I have one of the rare people here. I actually have someone here who is supporting John McCain for president. I have a gentleman by the name of Buddy O. Bush, who is with the group Lobbyists for McCain. Buddy O. Bush, I want to welcome you to Live from the March for Our Lives.
It's great to be here. It was not too far from K Street by our jet, so we got here very quickly.
Well, may I ask why you are coming to be a dissenter at this rally, and why you would be coming to a place like this to support McCain? What is it about McCain that that you feel is worthy of his support?
Well, John McCain has been a great friend to lobbyists ever since the days of the Keating Five incident. We don't call it a scandal because nothing happened as far as you know. And we are running John McCain's campaign, so we are here to make sure that the convention goes according to plan. And we're keeping an eye on these unwashed masses rallied here.
I see. And what would you want? You've kept an eye on them. What is McCain going to do for the the people here once he is elected? What is the lobbyist platform?
Well, the lobbyists don't really concern themselves with the poor or anybody else that can't write big checks. So we're just going to continue our steamrolling, as we jokingly refer to it, over everything that the poor people hold sacred. One of the main concerns we have is having four more wars in the next 4 years of this Republican administration.
That's, from your point of view, a worthy goal. And how do you expect to implement these things? Don't you think you'll have resistance, perhaps, from the Democrats in Congress?
We're not really worried about them. They're in our pockets as well. And I think having a John McCain White House is going to be important for continuing the Bush legacy. And that's really all that matters. The Democrats won't be able to stop us once we seize the White House and break up.
God us bless the old religion.
And the administration.
Well, now here's a point.
Old religion.
Which is, how is it then that you feel that Obama, why not support Obama if the Democrats are in your pockets too? Isn't Obama in your pocket?
You know, that's the frustrating thing. Obama not only won't take our calls, he won't take our checks. He won't even let lobbyists on his campaign. And unfortunately, that's the most important thing for us, is being able to control the campaign and the administration.
I see. So, all right, well, do you have any worries whatsoever that you might actually lose, or do you feel you have such a control of the election that you're in no danger?
We made sure to pay for the election. We are controlling the police and the streets and everything else. The only thing left is to just buy all the votes, and we're working on that as we speak.
Well, can't you just buy the voting machines?
We own the voting machines, as you saw in 2004 and 2000. We'll be seeing some of that again, hopefully, in November.
So you are actually, I think most of the people here would say that they're frustrated, almost despairing, many of them, and angry. And you're actually not, would seem.
No, we are celebrating. This is our convention. These are our streets. We own them. We've privatized this park today. And these people will all be corralled and taken to free speech pens where they won't be heard. Our concern only is to make sure that our clients get their message heard directly at the Bush-McCain White House.
Honestly, that I agree with all of your sentiments, but I will say that it's a refreshing change to hear somebody at this gathering who is in such an optimist. I'd like to thank you very much for bringing your...
thank you, Jeremy. I just want to add for the record that we are against refreshing change.
Okay, well... At this point, let me just tell people that the march is still gathering steam, and you can feel a kind of palpable energy that is rising here. You can feel it just in the tenor of the crowd, the enthusiasm with which they applaud the speakers. Sherry Hunkla has been speaking. Other people have been speaking. We've had performances. More and more signs. Here's somebody in a T-shirt that says 911 was an inside job. So we're seeing many diverse points of view. Here's somebody who says ACLU Liberty Guard on it, and people volunteer who are here to see that civil rights are respected. So you have really a very colorful and diverse assembly. And I am here with Angela Cole and Salix, who is 15 months old, in her arms, and I'm told that she may speak up on her own because she's a big believer in free speech, and so she may decide that she wants to say something at some point here. Angela Cole, with whom I am standing right now, is with a group called Seeds of Peace from Missoula, Montana. So that should tell you that people are here from all over. We've had somebody on already from Chicago, and now we have somebody on from Montana. And Seeds of Peace is a group that cooks for and feeds people at conventions and demonstrations all over the country. Angela Cole, welcome to the Live from the March for Our Lives broadcast.
Thanks for having me.
So you are here feeding people, and let's just start. What are you feeding people here?
Today on the menu, we've got a nice selection of beans and rice and cheese and turkey quesadillas. Then we've got some pico de gallo sauce on the side with mixed in with shredded cabbage. And that rounds out our day with a nice glass of water, getting ready for the march.
Now, this is, by the way, folks out there, how you know that the March for Our Lives is not a march of political lobbyists, because we have actually been talking here behind the scenes with some people connected with lobbyists in this city. And the rule is for lobbyists, we know that one of the theaters here was having a catered event where they had to have hundreds of very expensive hors d'oeuvres, but the rule is lobbyists can't serve anything to a delegate that you have to eat with a knife and a fork. But your food, you have to eat with a knife and a fork. Is that correct?
It is.
So therefore, we know that you're not here working for lobbyists, because that would not be legal. Who do you work for? In whose service do you feel you are?
Right now, we're feeding with Seeds of Peace, which is an organization based out of Missoula, Montana, currently. But it's come in all kinds of incarnations since about 1986. And mostly, it's most known for feeding people at the Nevada test site. And so every year, thousands of people would come in, and we'd collect food from all over the country, donations mostly. And you can hear Salix in the background.
So you see this as a form of service, as feeding people at demonstrations?
Absolutely. I mean, we feed for all over the place. We went to Katrina after the hurricane hit and spent months and months down there, based out of Common Ground Clinic, feeding residents, volunteers, everybody there, trying to clean up and recreate their lives after the aftermath of that hurricane. So we're all over the place, and we do a lot of homeless outreach, working poor, anything, really. You name it, we're there.
But people, I think, should know and would want to know how this is paid for. If you're not being paid for by the Fortune 500 companies here, which is how the people who are Republicans are being fed, no question, and the Democrats, I'm sorry to say, how do you raise money? Who pays for this kind of work?
It's all volunteer-based, and it's all by donation from our supporters and patrons, essentially.
Well, can you say anything before we move on? We're going to flip back to Jessica in a second, but I would like you to talk to me about, because you've been to many demonstrations, what can you say about the spirit of dissent? What can you tell me, because I hope there are many people listening to this who wonder why people even bother, or wonder what kinds of people they are. And yet, at the same time, the marchers will shout, this is what democracy looks like. What is it about the spirit of dissent that is something that you would want to support?
Well, it's across the board, you know, and when you're out here with everybody, you really see it in everyone's faces, and it's kind of, makes me a little choked up just to see how amazing this march has become, and how many great community leaders and people involved all over the country have poured out to really help out everyone in need. So we're all in need. We need a new government.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for being our guest and for the work. Thank you. And on that note, I'm going to go back to Jessica Lockhart, who also has a guest lined up. And Jessica, take it away.
A good-looking group. And I've got a group that is
a radical activist organization, but they are a marching band. And their name of the band is the Rude Mechanical Orchestra. They come from Brooklyn. And I've got two of the members here willing to talk to me. Just for background, you guys out there listening, they're wearing wonderful costumes, black and green. So I would first like to just ask Turtle, one of the members. Turtle, can you tell me what instrument you play and why the heck are you guys here?
Well, I'm playing the cymbals today with the band, and we're here at the end of our tour at the destination to help support the people protesting the Republican National Convention.
Great, and let me introduce Lily. Lily, will you tell me a little bit about the band? Can you start by saying how long the band has been around and what you guys do?
Yeah, absolutely. Our band formed around the last Republican National Convention, but it was in New York City. So it's, in a way, our four-year anniversary to be here. We're in the middle of a tour, as Turtle mentioned, across the country. We've been traveling in a school bus, running on waste vegetable oil. We're trying to not contribute to the need for oil. That is a huge part of the problem in our country right now. And what we're really doing is trying to drown out this climate of fear and repression that the Republican Party has been spreading around the world over the last 8 years. So we're really happy to be here working with a lot of different groups during this tour in a lot of different ways. And the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign is a really important one.
And did either of you see yesterday, did you see any of the protest? Did you see any of that, what was happening? Could you talk a little bit about that, what you saw?
Yeah, yesterday we were on the Capitol grounds, right around the Capitol yesterday during the protest with a lot of other groups that were nearby. On the small area of St. Paul where it is currently legal to protest. Sometimes called the free speech zone is that there's only one area in which you have free speech in the city right now. So just as Turtle was referencing, really having a city taken over in this way is something that we're trying to support St. Paul as well in dealing with this situation. So we did see a lot of different groups coming together and participating in the march and other people protesting in various ways yesterday.
And we're speaking with Lily and Turtle, two members of the Rude Mechanical Orchestra. Is a radical marching band. They're activists from Brooklyn. And from what we know, there's always giant, lavish parties that are around these conventions that happen after the actual convention on the Excel Center floors end. And they go into the night, and a lot of money is spent. And I think it would be fabulous if next time they would invite the radical activist group called the Rude Mechanical Orchestra into some of those big donor parties. Thank you so much for speaking with us. And what we'll be looking for is you guys hearing you in the march. So, thanks. Now, we've got a lot more people to talk to here. Coming from St. Paul, live from St. Paul, and the march is just about to start. I'm going to go ahead and send us back to Jeremy. Jeremy, are you there?
I'm here, and thank you very much, Jessica. The march is getting ready to start. Sherry Hunkelow, who is the director of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Commission, said she was just going to start the march, and she was going to go over here. I'm speaking now with Reverend Bruce Wright. Bruce, welcome to Live from the March for Our Lives.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
And you're from where, Bruce?
St. Petersburg, Florida.
And the homeless people of St. Petersburg, Florida, I know you work with them. Have they been just treated like royalty there?
Oh, man. Between tent slashing, five homeless people murdered last year, ordinances that make it illegal to sleep outside, there's been nonstop assault in the Tampa Bay area, especially St. Petersburg, on the homelessness, on the homeless issue.
You were telling me, I know, I'm a big believer in letting homeless people be able to fend for themselves, make a tent city, try to survive. And what happened when the people of St. Petersburg, the homeless people there, tried to do that?
Well, when the homeless people tried to organize their own tent city, the city of St. Pete and its police force attacked it, slashed the tents in half with homeless people in it, And as a result, they were displaced. We had to fight for their rights, but then they passed an ordinance making it illegal to sleep outside. So the city's answer was to create their own bureaucratically run tent city near the jail, where the homeless have no say-so. But for the last 10 months, they've been running it, the city and its officials and Catholic Charities, and at the cost of $300,000 a month. Extremely inefficient and with no say-so from the homeless.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I understand it, they make the homeless people in this camp leave during the day?
Yes, they need to be out, quote-unquote, looking for work. They give some minor consideration to if you're sick or handicapped, but they want you out by 6 or 7 in the morning. They don't give you social services. They make you go, have to drive miles away to get to it.
So why are you here today in this march?
I'm here to support the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign's march and call to bring charges to the U.S. government for economic human rights violations.
Let's take a second and listen to the crowd. They're chanting, if you can't make it out, stop the war on the poor. And the march is crescendoing here, and they're really getting ready. Flip it over to Jessica Lockham.
Situation at the opposite end of the park. From what I can tell, one of the Native American dancers that just performed up on the stage, one of the local reporters has told me that he saw the police upon this person. And right now, a lot of the people in the police
They started blocking the intersection here about 10 minutes ago, and then they're trying to clear it now, and then they've arrested a few people on these horse guys arrested some people, and then it's getting a little tense, but that's as much as I can gather. So you think some of the demonstrators tried to block the intersection? Oh yeah, the anarchists are here big time. Okay, so you think then that there was some change in the nature of the dissent that provoked the police? Oh, right, yeah. There's two different things going on here. There's a Poor People's March, and then the anarchists that are in amongst them just working the crowd. So they're taking advantage of the peaceful demonstration to do what they're going to do. Okay, well, thank you very much for that report. Now, that is an unverified eyewitness report, but that's what we're being told. And I'm going to go turn it back over to Jessica. And Jessica, do you want to see if you can find someone who was a witness? Is there anybody here who saw the start of the incident?
I'm still down here, and we're looking to see if there's going to be any kind of resolution between the standoff where the protesters have So now what's happening is Sherry Hakala is back at the beginning of where the march was about to take place, and she's calling for people to come back and to let's get this march started. So Sherry is back on the stage, and she is asking people to please come back and let's go for our march, and let's focus on the poor people, human rights, economic, and the March for Our Lives. So let's see if there's still a large group of people that have stayed up front getting ready to march. So let's see if it looks like that we might be getting the march underway, and we'll see if we can disperse the problem down at the other end of the park. So Jeremy,
I'm here. I'm back up at the head of the march, and we're going to try to get Sherry to speak for a moment. Here comes Sherry. This is Sherry Honkala, who is the founder of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. Sherry?
We're getting to ready to march right now. We're surrounded by police officers, and I've got to get ready to tell people that we've got to start marching, marching for our lives, and they're not going to silence us today. We're going to go march. Warrant for crimes against humanity. This is out of control. We've suffered from terrorism, and this stuff has got to stop. We've got to stand up. We've got to do something about it, and we've got to put an end to the real violence in this country, which was unemployment, hunger, and homelessness.
Thank you very much, Sherry. Thank you.
Okay, so, Jeremy, we've got a lot of people that are really still looking forward to participating in this march. A lot of people that are hoping that we can get back to going down to the convention and presenting down at the Excel Center. What Sherry Hakla says is we're going to present some citizens' arrest. So, Jeremy, we're back down by where the incident happened, and I've got a gentleman who was an eyewitness. And you said that you saw the very first situation that happened. Can you just tell us your name and what you saw?
Yes, my name is Scott, and there was a line of police blocking the street. There were some protesters in the street. There was words between the police officers and the protesters, and a line of four mounted police officers charged through the middle of the crowd, put the crowd in half, and brought two people who had their hands up and who were not causing any problems at all, and removed them from the crowd. That's all that I saw.
And then I've got another gentleman here who's been taking photographs yesterday inside the convention hall and today down here at Mears Park. Can you tell us your name and a little bit about what you've been seeing?
Hi, my name's Adam, and I've been taking photos down here at Mears Park. And it's a chaotic situation. And we had a recent incident where one of the protesters had some sort of a seizure. And interestingly, when I approached to take some photographs, the protesters denied me access to this image. They put their hands over my camera, and they told me to stand back and do not take pictures of it to respect the sentiment of privacy. Interesting situation. Previously, they were very much wanting to exploit what the police had been doing to arresting a couple of protesters. So we can see some things and not others.
Thank you. And it looks like right now there are the police marching down Fifth Street in the riot gear. The police that have been on bikes are behind them. And I believe that the police on the horses are following here. The march has actually begun, so I think the police are getting ready to follow the march, and I'm going to send us back to Jeremy. And Jeremy, are you there?
I'm here. I can hear you. I'm up at the head of the march. We're marching now. We're rolling now. People are on the vanguard of the march. We've got baby carriages in the vanguard of the march. People are shouting, "Stop the war on the poor," and I'm walking next to a gentleman who's in a motorized wheelchair. Sir, what's your name?
Rick Cardenas.
And Mr. Cardenas, if I may ask you about a simple question, what are you doing here?
Well, hey, I think there's too much money, too many lives being lost, but it's all being put on the backs of poor people, losing health care, losing housing, losing many of their ability to function in this society.
May I ask, sir, what is the nature of your disability?
Oh, I'm a quadriplegic for many years, 40 years, over 40 years.
And that happened in an accident of some sort?
A car accident. But it's a loss of resources for many people with disabilities, and there are cutbacks all over the country on the services that persons with disabilities receive.
Well, you are what Ronald Reagan referred to as the truly needy. You're quadriplegic, and Ronald Reagan promised that the truly needy wouldn't fall through the social safety net. So have you been having an easy time of it?
Well, I think that's a lie. I've worked with many persons with disabilities. I get emails every day. I work at Advocating Change Together, an organization that tries to empower persons with developmental disabilities. And always at the bottom of the bottom rung, and the services that they receive in Minnesota, it's good, but throughout the country it's bad. But which is not to say that Minnesota is perfect and we should not make it better here.
And can you tell me what you hear from people around the country? What kinds of things, now again, and what kinds of things do people not get? People in your situation, what kinds of trouble do they encounter?
Well, they don't get services for PCAs, personal care attendants. They get minimal hours. Persons with developmental disabilities are begging for services that they need. If you look at other countries, people with disabilities receive all the services they need all over Europe. And here we're out fight for ourselves and have to try to make do with the minimal amount of services that each state is providing. Again, I repeat that Minnesota has better services than many, which is not to say that Minnesota is the greatest. So,
are you able to support yourself, to live in a house and to eat enough and have the health care you need?
I do, but I've been in the system for a long time, and I worked with Senator Wellstone, so I sort of know how to wiggle through the system, which is not what everybody knows. So I'm having a relatively good time. However, still cannot have a savings account, cannot have retirement, and have to continue to work.
And do you find that, so that there are people even here in Minnesota, you think, who are having a struggle with their disability circumstances?
Well, the barriers are the same with everyone. Not enough money to do what you want to do. Not enough money to save. It's against the law to save for retirement. It's against the law to have more than $2,000 in the bank. So,
all right, I want to thank you very much, and I want to wish you well on this march. Thank you, sir. Okay, I'm hearing a voice in my ear, and we're running out of time here. We have 2 minutes, so I think I'm just going to walk and describe to you what the scene is as we're going along. Right now, you can hear in the background, all of my listeners out there, you can hear that we are marching. We are walking now through the streets, and I'm kind of at the front, and behind me I see signs, housing is a human right. 120 homeless Minnesotans died in 2007. Question number one, why? Arrest Bush. These are the kinds of sentiments you hear. I see a woman in a pink leotard that says no war on it and on a bicycle. I see several bicyclists. But at the same time I'm seeing this colorful assembly, I'm seeing an entire phalanx here of black helmeted, black suited, you know, the turtle suits. Police who are here, and they're lined up, and the march is now getting ready to proceed, but there's a kind of a tense atmosphere. I would say that there's maybe 50, maybe 80 lined up police, but you know, who knows? I can't tell. We're going to have to leave the air at this point. We wanted to give you some of the diversity of this march. We wanted to help people out there understand all of what goes into a poor people's movement and the kinds of people who are here and the kind of passion that is here. These are things you won't hear reported in the mainstream media, which will dismiss this only in terms of the numbers count and maybe reporting on a police incident. But what I hope you've heard out there today is people with hearts and souls, people who are suffering, people who are fighting for change in this country, and people who have just cause for wanting to see that change. And I'm hearing the theme music, and I want to thank you all for listening to this live from the March for Our Lives. And I hope all of you will have been inspired and moved by what you've heard here today. And all of you will respect the cause of poor people as we now march into the uncertain future where I see another phalanx of dozens of police. And we will just have to leave you there and hope that the march makes it through. Thank you very much for listening.
March for Our Lives is a production of KFCF Fresno. Thanks to Jeremy Alderson, Mike Alderson, Jessica, Mike Rhodes at Rich Withers, and all the other people that assisted. This is produced by KFCF Fresno.